consider that.
That's Jennifer.
The image does not resemble a cadaver, but could be the strangeness of a cadaver is also the strangeness of the image. What we call the mortal remains evades the usual categories. Something is there before us that is neither the living person herself, nor any sort of reality. Neither the same as the one who was alive, nor another thing. What is there in the absolute calm that has found its place? Nevertheless, does not realize the truth of being fully here. Presence establishes a relation between here and nowhere. First of all, in the mortuary chamber and on the deathbed, the repose that must be maintained shows how fragile the ultimate position is. Here is the cadaver, but here in turn becomes a cadaver. Here below, absolutely, with no up there resolving itself at any moment. The place where one dies is not just any place at all. One does not willingly transport these remains from one spot to another. Death jealously secures its place and unites with it to the very bottom in such a way that the indifference of that place, the fact that it is nevertheless just any place at all, becomes the depth of its presence as death, becomes the support of indifference, a yawning intimacy of a nowhere without difference, yet one that must be situated here. Remaining is not accessible to the one who dies. The deceased, we say, is no longer of this world. She has left it behind her. But what is left is precisely this cadaver, which is not of this world either, even though it's here, which is rather behind the world, something the living person and not the deceased has left behind, and which now affirms on the basis of this the possibility of a world behind, of return backwards, an indefinite survival, indeterminate, indifferent, about which we only know the new reality when it comes to an end, reconstitutes its presence and proximity.
Example in Shakespeare, in our tradition, we have the phrase of the spear character. Okay, the spear character. I'm not quite sure really where to begin. I'm right. Shakespeare. You speak in Hudson movies, but I don't think that. There's a continuity of experimental theater that follows a line from the turn of the century to present. And experimental and political theater has its own tradition, has its own history. And that while we're also a bit wary of history and its meaning, value. As alchemists, we want to take the linear story of it, bend it around, and have the snake bite its tail, and allow us an understanding of the information in a more mandala-like way, from which we can draw hints at any moment that pertains to our own work. So this information is a kind of architecture of ideas that finally builds a kind of stone effigy to experimental theater and what it is, but hopefully it can inspire us, give us tools to use, and tools that are flexible enough to transform into what our needs are at the present moment in our creative process. Stanislavski. Very much to do with the inevitable direction
but it's changing. Meyerhold and Stanislavski. Meyerhold. From subject to subject, because I want to turn that into a circle and employ radical discontinuity in the same way that the film has appropriated an aspect of the theater and developed it through technology to meet our perception and give us the enjoyment of contact with the acceleration of consciousness. I can read that. I can follow that. I can follow that. The state of the art, 30-second commercials. In 30 seconds, you get follow the piece, follow the piece, and of course the product is always there. Actors, directors. relationships that are based on social contracts that are linked to this idea of pop psychoanalysis. Erwin de Schotter, who this idea of epic theater, is very much an influence in the movie theater's work. I would say that the major influence in the movie theater's work in terms of the history of theater, it's like Ireland, Schotter, Brett, Bartow. And what we draw from the scholar and recognizing his work that's meaningful for us still is this concept in Germany at that time of the Weltanschauung, the world picture, which is linked to a philosophical movement at that time, in which they linked Weltanschauung with Weltschmerz. Weltanschauung is world picture, Weltschmerz is world pain. The more objective you get, the more you see the world. Dominated by this idea for a very long time, and now we want to change that. And this idea of Aristotle's voices, suspension of discipline, and an activity in the part of the audience, and an experimental theater group, very interested in what in the audience, in the public gathering, what that's about. The actors in the event to affect the appearance of the culture. Oh my God. Oh shit. Yeah, I remember that. That happened to me. to live vicariously the life of the protagonist from the solitude and darkness of the audience. What they wanted to lessen, what they wanted to increase, was a kind of objectivity. But Tull, on the other hand, wanted a Dionysian not just coming out and setting the line, but there's the moment, and that's the dynamic turn. So, we have a supplemental marriage with the Dionysian Galilee. And in 1973, when Louis Theatre was in the midst of renewed commitment to go out and create screen theater. We were looking for forms that we could develop for the street. Basic problem for us at that moment with street theater, the term of street theater was, that there is a cacophony going on in the street, a movement and sound. First of all, how does the act of theater move that? How do you draw attention? These are in some ways, the theater is also a very old-fashioned company. They've been together since 1948, gone through many changes. And the Living Theater, when you join the Living Theater, you don't go through a lot of like rigorous physical exercises in order to situate yourself in a certain technique, but rather we'll appropriate and invent techniques to serve the moment in terms of what the needs are. So in that respect, it's a very old-fashioned company. You come into the company and you ask the other actors, the other actors, what they're doing, what do I do? You know? It's very it's very in the tradition, in the sense that, you know, walking, there's a line you have to say, and make sure the person in the last thing hears you. And I found out, working with them for a while in the beginning, that you'll learn it in performance. You'll learn it in performance. The actor prepares, but you'll learn it in performance. And that said, let me anyway show you some of the techniques that we've worked on. Specifically for street theater, you could admire the woman's work, and we looked at biomechanics. Biomechanics is a movement discipline for actors. Meyerhold thought of it in kind of like three different ways. He thought of it as basically a movement discipline, actors can practice in order to develop a sense of kinesthesia, knowing where your body is in space and the relationship between voluntary and involuntary consciousness. Every dancer develops kinesthesia, you know, when they're a dancer, and they know their hand goes, make a right hand, okay. Consciousness entering the body, quote, that's one idea. Another idea was, in terms of creation of character, I said actor's relationship to the audience and to the set, stage set, and it has kind of a constructivist, that sounds like a constructivist overtone, in the sense that the actor's body the actor's body is limited and affected by a dialogue with the forms and angles of the set, and built sets in which the actors are reflecting the feeling of the set and use that in their bodies. You're standing in spaces like this, you know, so not only crouched down in it, but it affects how you feel. The angles are on what's that movie here? Caligari. Expressions, angles, the actors moving around like this, positions like that, you know, set of the ground, it's like a reflection of how the environment is acting upon the body. He said, huh, that's a really cool idea. The environment acts upon the body and limits us or forces us to have some kind of like dialogue. Therefore, this third idea of Meyerhold, that it's a biomechanical field that's determined by history, culture, technology, where it's at the moment, yoga, your daily life, yoga work, business and all that stuff in the world. So, in Meyerhold's time, it was a time in which there was great optimism in terms of the Industrial Revolution. We were going to feed everybody and stop all the wars through the machine. The machine was going to save everybody. So at that time, Meyerhold, with that, he said, well, here in Russia, we have the heroic proletariat. We're about to seize the means of production. We're not going to be doing this research for capitalists. We're going to be doing it for ourselves. So, in a way, he's licensed to borrow this idea of the economy and movement. But the interesting thing for us still today is that he designated this idea of the body's relationship to technology. And in my work, this has a great significance in terms of the body and the atmosphere. Because, as I said before, it's linked to the, in my mind, to the audience's ability to read, our ability to read, how we're practicing an acceleration of consciousness, and how can we hold quickly consciousness. Meyerhold's technology in his time was an extension of the force and the mass of the human body into the machine. Well, you go like that, and you can throw something, or you know, whatever the body could do, they were creating machines that could do it more efficiently, better, and operators who had this, were developing this other relationship to like turn the lever, do the thing, you know. And of course, there were still laborers, that's still the tool. Bang. And so he developed. From his observation of the body's relationship to technology, he developed this idea of the actor. In our own time, we have a different technology. Even though we still have machines, which are extensions of the force and mass of the human body, we have a technology which is based on the speed of light. So rather than being a prosthesis on the body, our technology becomes a prosthesis on the liveliness of consciousness. And that's a biomechanical, problem for the actor to solve. That we appear to one another in the biomechanical field of our current culture. That the effect, in
It's a movement study that we reconstructed from Meyerholtz called Stringing in the Bow. Had tools, we figured out basically the basic tasks in steel mill work, creating these in Pittsburgh. Everybody in the town worked on developing this vocabulary movement. We started with an emblematic movement study for the working class that goes like this. That's the production process. The first two moves is something that Meyerholtz called dapple, and begins these movement studies. The basic idea was gather the raw material, just that moment, and it's been skilled work to the observer. It's like magic, how's the guy do it? But the person who's doing it, who has the knowledge to do it, but also the person who invests part of his life in the thing that he or she creates, and then turns, finishes the process by giving it away, and the compensation is not enough.
Turn in to the 2x2 line and
take from the tradition of this, something comes unto me, one of us is standing here, put it on his leg, and you have two people standing on shoulders, two people sitting on shoulders, the whole machine keeps moving down the street, it comes down, we do the 36 questions again in Spanish, so the machine again, it comes down, there's a final movement, in which we arrive finally in front of the AMP, and we do a series of five barricades of our bodies, and sing to the audience, this is a barricade of people, their bodies, asking you not to buy from your presence. One more quick thing. A big part of the New Theater's work from 1970 until still there's a lot of traces of it is an idea that's based on Sasha Masoch's masochism comes from Sasha Masoch.
I gotta let them go, but let's tell them where they can get into more, where you're gonna be doing a workshop.
That's my phone number. If you want, even if you're not interested in classes,